Welcome to TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM autograph collector, sponsored by sportscardforum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion. And now, here's our host, Jeff Baker.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM autograph collector. My name is Jeff Baker. I'm your host for the program. We have a really cool interview today with former major league pitcher, Mr. Randy Lurch. Randy has written a new book, and we talk about his new book. We talk about his career, his very interesting career, and we also talk about collecting and TTMing. So hopefully you enjoy that. That's coming up shortly. As always, you can reach me by email at ttmcast@yahoo.com. Once again, my email address is ttmcast@yahoo.com. Always looking for suggestions about the program. If you're interested in being a guest on our future program, or if you just want to give some feedback and comments about today's program or any other program, please send me an email at ttmcast@yahoo.com. My podcast can be found everywhere podcasts are nowadays. We're on Spotify. We are on Podbean. We're on Google Listen. We're on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. We are also, we have a forum on Sports Card Forum. And if you have an Alexa device, all you have to do is say, Alexa, play TTM Cast Podcast, and you'll hear the most current podcast, or you can listen to old podcast. So please spread the word, let people know about the podcast, and now on to our regular segments. Our first segment is Baker's Dozen. Baker's Dozen is just kind of a brain dump of what's been going on in the hobby for the last week or so. Our next show will be next week, March 8th. I have a really exciting show coming up. I have a special guest, and I also have an interview that I conducted with a former National League Most Valuable Player a couple weeks ago. So two great guests coming up next week. We'll have a cool show, and after that, I'll be heading to Florida for some work stuff and maybe hopefully catch a spring training game. But we will still have a show every week all the way through March. A couple other things going on. There is a new show coming up in Wilmington, Massachusetts. We talked about last week. It's going to be April 17th through the 19th. It is at the Shriners Auditorium in Wilmington, Massachusetts. And there's a lot of guests that they've already nailed down. Pete Rose will be there. Dennis Hexley will be there. Bill Mueller will be there. All sorts of guys. So hopefully, if you're in the New England area, I recommend attending the show. It's the Rich Altman Show in Wilmington, Massachusetts. I purchased a Topps Heritage 2020 blaster pack the other day from Walmart. I should say my wife purchased it for me, and I busted it open. I got some good cards out of it. I got a Aaron Judge card. I got a Garrett Cole card in the Yankees uniform, which was cool. I got a bunch of other cool cards. So very happy with the Heritage 2020 look. It has the design of the 1971 Tops, and I think it's a cool looking card. Other than that, I just want to welcome new listeners. If you're a new listener to the program, please welcome, and please spread the word about this program and let people know what we're doing here. And now on to the Vern Rapp Minute. Vern Rapp Minute is dedicated to Mr. Vern Rapp, who had passed away, and I had sent him a autograph request through the mail after he had passed away and not realizing it. So I do this as a service to my fellow TTM collectors so that they don't be embarrassed like me sending out a TTM request to someone who had recently passed away. So we lost a couple people this week in sports. We lost Nesby Glasenow. You might remember Nesby Glasenow. He was a defensive back for the Baltimore Ravens and the Indianapolis Colts and the Seattle Seahawks. He was 62 years old. He passed away last week. And then we just yesterday, actually, or 2 days ago, lost Johnny Antonelli, who was a pitcher for the New York Giants back in the 50s. He was a member of the 1954 World Series Championship team. He was 89, so we lost Mr. Antonelli. Condolences to their families, and sorry for your loss. And now on to returns. As I said, I've been sending out stuff, TTM requests, more recently, so I've been getting some nice returns. I got a couple returns for my 1978 set. I got Jerry Kuzman from the New York Mets, kind of nice in-action card. He signed it in blue Sharpie, very nice signature, and that took like a week. I got two back from Dennis Leonard, who was the pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, on a 78 card, and on his Victory Leaders card that I had already had Dave Gold signed. So now I have to send it out to Jim Palmer and Steve Carlton, but I've got those two back. I got a beautiful return for on a 1958 Topps card from Mr. Carl Erskine, and he obviously pitched for the Los Angeles and Brooklyn Dodgers, and this 1958 card I picked up at the Rhode Island car show a couple weeks ago. And I picked the card up for $1, sent it off to Mr. Erskine. He signed it in a couple weeks, so it's nice when a plan comes to fruition, and the autograph looks great. I got one other. I got Mike Stanley back from the – he was a catcher for the Rangers and Yankees and Red Sox, and I got this on 1994 Topps card. This took about a year to get back, but I see he's signing his autographs and catching up with his mail. So thank you for Mike Stanley. And then I got a couple football cards. I got a nice card from Kevin Falk. This is a 2007 Topps card, and he went to town on it. He signed it, put his number on it, put 3-time Super Bowl champs. Excuse me, put New England Patriots on it, and I sent that to him in at LSU, and he signed it back and returned it in about 3 weeks. And then lastly, I got one card for my 1992 game day set. I got Randall Hill from the Phoenix Cardinals or Arizona Cardinals. I had sent him a card, I don't know, a while ago, and he sent me back a card that wasn't mine. So I sent a second card, and he said return this in a couple weeks. So actually pretty happy with my returns this week. As I said, I have a lot of TTM requests out. I'm going to send out a bunch at the beginning of this week. So the returns keep coming in, and it's nice to get one or two a day for TTM returns. And to close out the program, we have an interview that I conducted with Mr. Randy Lurch last week. Randy has written a new book, God in the Bullpen, and it's all about his trials and tribulations of his MLB career, coming up through the minors. He talks about his drug addiction and addiction to alcohol, and then there's a lot of post-career stuff. So really a great book. I recommend you go check it out. It is available on Amazon. And we talked to Randy about his new book, and we also talked to him about collecting at TTM. So hopefully you enjoy our interview.
This week's interview is brought to you by SportsCardForum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion.
Joining us on the TTM Cast Hotline from his home in Northern California is former Major League pitcher. He pitched for the Philadelphia Phillies. He pitched for the Montreal Expos and the Milwaukee Brewers, and he finished up his career with the San Francisco Giants. I almost said 49ers there. Sorry about that. And he's a recent inductee to the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame, and he added an author to his long list of resumes. He just penned a book, God in the Bullpen. Welcome to the program, Mr. Randy Lurch.
Well, thank you so much. It's nice to be here, and as I was saying when we were talking, it's nice to be talking back east to the great Massachusetts Boston fans. I love playing back there.
Thank you. Well, you know what? I've been seeing all these posts on Instagram and on Facebook about you getting into the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. That must have been nice for a nice feeling for you to get inducted into your hometown Hall of Fame.
What an honor it was. I think it was one of the greatest honors that's ever happened to me, just because it was from my local fans that I grew up with. And I have an inside exciting story. I don't know how much of it got out, but years ago when I was playing with the Phillies, and then I ended up playing when I was playing with the San Francisco Giants, Dusty Baker was one of my teammates with the Giants, but also when I was with the Phillies, Dusty was with the Dodgers, and he befriended people like Gary Matthews. So in the offseason, Dusty would come back east to Philadelphia and do some, some charity events and stuff like that. And of course, we were teammates with the Giants, and I hadn't seen Dusty in, 25 years. And I didn't know who I was going to ask to be my presenter at the Sports Hall of Fame, which actually was just 3 weeks ago or so. It was on January 25th. And so I called Dusty, because Dusty was a fire inductee. He accepted to my great honor. And when he got up there and he was talking about my book, God in the Bullpen, and was doing such a great job, and it was my turn to get up and accept the award from Dusty. At that time, Dusty was interviewing for the vacant manager's job with the Houston Astros, Boston, not as much probably the New York Mets, but a lot with the Houston Astros. And when I came up to get the award, I said, well, Dusty, I better talk fast, basically, because you never know. The phone might ring for you to accept the Houston, or them to offer the job. You accept the Houston Astros job, and that'll be the end of it. And lo and behold, the night went great. It was a great honor to me. And the next morning, I woke up and read the news reports that Dusty had accepted the Houston Astros job. And boy, Dusty's a great guy, and I feel honored to be one of the ones that almost predicted it a little bit.
That's funny. Now, just a quick side note that Dusty Baker, obviously, for obvious reasons, I was a huge fan of his, and I actually named my dog Dusty after him. So,
what a great story!
It kind of comes full circle. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Dusty Baker, and it must have been a nice night for you to share with people that you grew up with and former teammates and after reading your book, all the trials and tribulations you went through. It must have been a nice keystone moment for your career and your life.
It was, and one thing I wanted to do with the book, not just to talk about my story of the drug and alcohol abuse, and now I live with cirrhosis, and you never know, it's a one day at a time thing. And God has blessed me with an opportunity to write that book and to be able to share, the love and hope of God the way that I've been given a second chance. But one thing I wanted to do with the book was to be able to, a lot of books that I've read that are baseball books, it really didn't get into whether it was, a lot of the guys were just, really famous guys, great, great players like a Tom Seaver, or a great hitter like, the Sam Usual or a lot of the great ones. But what I wanted to get into was talk about how it is growing up to be able to come through, Little League and the ranks and also what it's like for a young kid in my situation to be 17, 18 years old and all of a sudden never be on an airplane before, and then be put, sign a contract, get on an airplane after you've already played a full season on your high school team and say, look it, you're going to go play another season. It's going to be a half of a season, but you're going to get on a plane. You're going to fly all the way to New York. In my case, it was Auburn, New York, of the New York Penn League, and then you're going to play another season. And what I wanted to do was tell the story of what it was like for a kid to have his first professional pitching coach, to have his first bus trip, to try tobacco, chewing tobacco this time, and what it was like, you know, like meal money. I mean, we got $5 a day to eat on, and no matter whether you were a bonus baby or whatever, in my case, I was not. And how much money you made, and we, every player on the team, no matter who they were, make $500 a month. And I think that story is really lost in nowadays, because now that you just talk about how much money the players make, but in the days where I was coming through the ranks before I made it to the big leagues, it was a real, real tough deal with the bus trips and stuff to even get a chance to, like they say, have a cup of coffee. And thank God I ended up playing over 11 years in the major leagues.
Yeah, now we're referring to, of course, your new book. It's titled God in the Bullpen. It is available on Amazon. I finished it in about 3 days because I couldn't put it down. I actually finished it on Super Bowl Sunday, and it was I really, really, you were talking about, you know, join it, what I want to say, it was, it's not really, it's a baseball book, but it's not just a baseball book. I think it's a book about friends, family, perseverance, and faith. And I think that, you know, the human side of being a baseball player, you know, a professional athlete, you really touch on.
You hit it right on the head. I just, what I was trying to make, you know, to convey in the book was that it was a book of love, because when I was diagnosed with cirrhosis and I went to my specialist, my liver specialist, and first of all, they said, well, you're in bad shape. You know, all your tests show that you need to go on a liver transplant list. And at that point, I told him, I said, look, I've done this to myself. I don't deserve this. And I don't know, I just feel like it was God talking to me. And when I walked out the door, the doctor put his hand on my shoulder and said, you know, you can go into liver failure at any time. Meaning, when I walked out the door, I was a walking dead man. I knew what liver cirrhosis meant. And it just depended on how much damage you'd done to your liver. And they really don't know, you know, it's hard to tell for them to be able to tell what you, you know, how much damage you have. But what they do know is by the test, it looked pretty bad for me. And when I, after a year and a half, after I got stronger and stronger, and the doctor looked at me and said that, I don't want to ruin the book, but it looks like you've been given a second.
Well, you're ruining the book by being here on the phone after the book is over, so we know you're doing a little better.
Okay. Well, thank you. But anyway, I wanted to climb the tallest mountain hill or whatever and just say I've been given a second chance. And so I called my book A Book of Love, because I had to. I love you know, my brothers and sisters in this world, and I, it took that much love to bear my soul like I did, because as you know, I got really down to the nitty gritty of how bad it got for me, and then I also wanted to share that there's hope out there. You know, for no matter if you're in an alcoholic, a drug situation, or whatever situation you might be going through, that there is hope in God. I wanted to convey that.
Yeah, and I think you did that in the book. I mean, you know, you talked a little about being a 17, 18-year-old kid, and 1 week you're in at home, and then you sign your contract, and you're out in the minor league. And is that when you got exposed to some of the vices, the, you know, the amphetamines and the alcohol that you write about in the book?
I did. I was in high school. I was a goody two shoes. I mean, I wasn't even one of the guys that would go out. Some of the guys would go out and say, oh, let's go drink some beers or something like that. I was always just so scared to death of something. I was just a scaredy cat and a goody two shoes, and I took that through the minor league, and I led my minor league career, my pitching career, almost in every category. I either led it in wins, earned run average, or strikeouts, and I was pitcher of the year in the minor leagues 1 year. And then after going 26 scoreless innings in spring training and making the team at 22 years old in 1977, after a couple short stints in 75 and 76 on call-ups, I started the major league season 5-2, And one of my teammates that I looked up to said, look it, you're doing great now, but it's a long season, it's a long haul, and you'll never be able to be successful unless you take these pills. And so I hated the feeling a lot of anxiety before the game, and I didn't realize that that's what helped me to be a better pitcher, to be really on top of things and pitch. The nervousness did that for me. And then when I took the pills, it took all that away. And I liked that feeling and realized that after I took the amphetamines, then how am I going to go to sleep? So after staring at the ceiling a few times after taking the pills, I realized that if I drank a lot of alcohol, it could help me to sleep, and it snowballed after that. My disease increased, and it came to the point, as you read in the book, I'm lucky to be sitting here right now.
Yeah, I mean, what the book taught to me, brought to me, is that sometimes we don't think of professional athletes as people, as human beings, you know, people that have families and deal with fears and insecurities and everyday problems that everyone has. Because, you know, you're somebody that's either on a baseball card or we see you on television, and we don't see the human side. And I think you brought a real human side to being a professional athlete.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is great insight on your part, because what I did is probably if I wouldn't have been a professional athlete that had some success in the major leagues, I think any time you play 11 years in the major leagues and stay around, that's success in itself. But I had some pretty great moments from time to time and some pretty bad ones. But one thing I wanted to do by writing the book is tell people that no matter who you are, like you said, you can be, you know, you can be a very famous person or at the other end of the totem pole. And if I wrote a book saying, look, you know, anybody can have a drug and alcohol problem or something else. And I felt like if I told my story saying that no matter who you are, that can end up that people would pay attention to that. Because, look, I'm going to tell you something. You never, ever want to go through that situation where you look in your wife's eyes after you've been diagnosed with cirrhosis and she shakes her head and says, oh, no, don't leave me. I mean, that'll make you quit drinking right there. And so after 40 years of drinking, I made a promise to her I was going to do everything I could to try and to stay around as long as I could. And God's Spirit gave me the opportunity and the wherewithal to want to go on and write a book with Harold Lurch, who is a Christian author, who actually proposed it to me. And so I wanted to get the word out there.
Well, I think you did a good job. We're speaking with Mr. Randy Lurch, who wrote a new book, God in the Bullpen. It is available on Amazon. It's the story of Randy's career as a major league pitcher, and he really touches base with what he does after his major league career and how he came out of the major leagues with no education and no career path and really forged a pretty successful career for himself, and how he battled drug and alcohol addiction. It's an uplifting book, but it's also a fun book. So, Randy, I know, you talked a lot about some of the mentors, some of the people that helped you out, some of your friends and some of your teammates, and some of the managers you dealt with were kind of different types of people as well.
You did read the book. thank you so much. Yes, one of my great friends and someone that helped to save my life was Tug McGraw. Tug was, he was a fun guy. He was, people say he was goofy, but one thing Tug did is he loved the game, and first of all, he loved people. And Tug, when I was down and out, Tug McGraw came and got me and gave me a place to stay and helped me to get on my feet, along with Larry Christensen, who actually helped me to get a job. And you know, when you have people like that that are willing to, you always need someone. to help you along the line and help you out. We all do. We can't do things on our own in this world. That's not the way it's meant to be. And also some great managers that I had. I think probably the most low-key manager I ever had was Danny Ozark. Some people would disagree as far as his managerial skills and stuff like that, but what I needed right then was, being a young kid, I needed just kind of like a father figure, along with Bob Tiefenauer, who helped me through the ranks. And you know, one of the guys that I probably didn't get along with was Dallas Green, but I probably earned a lot of his feelings about me too. So, but it's looking back on it, I didn't realize that a lot of times people criticize players if they're not at the top of the list as far as their statistics. But now that I'm out of the game for a long time, I look back and I watch the guys on TV and stuff like that and say, man, those guys are pretty good. And just to be able to say I played in the major leagues is now, I say, that was a pretty big honor.
Now, you played on some pretty good Phillies teams back in the 70s. You guys were always fighting the Dodgers to get into the World Series, and you actually made it to the World Series in 1980. But you know, I guess you know, you had the misfortune, is that the bad fortune of not getting on that 80s playoff team. But that's something that it seems to like you finally came to peace with.
I did. It broke my heart, and it was something that was probably the low of my career when Herm Strick came to me and said that I wasn't going to be I was on the team. They wanted me to travel with the team and everything, just not be on the roster. And being as young as I was, I really didn't understand that. Look, you could not be a part of the roster for one series, and then you might be on it like they do this day and age.
Yep.
No one explained anything to me, and I took it really personal, and it broke my heart. And I look back on it, and I probably should have made some better decisions, but I didn't. And it was a hard decision that I made. And now we're going to have the 40th, believe it or not, it's been 40 years since the Philadelphia 1980 World Series. I can't believe how old I'm getting, but we're going to have the 40th Phillies World Series reunion from 1980 in August. And all bygones, you know, bygones be bygones. I'm really looking forward to seeing all the guys. I haven't seen them for a lot of years. And it's going to be like it never happened for me.
Well, I'm going to have to put you to work, my friend, and have you get a signed ball for me or something, because I'm green with envy that you're going to get to see all these guys.
Well, you know what? We talked about before. We talked a little bit. You know, I one of the reasons I wanted to come on the show, not just, of course, to plug my book, but also I love the, you know, I call it the dying art of the baseball card collectors and the memorabilia collectors, because believe it or not, I still get tons and tons of fan mail. I probably get, when I say tons and tons, for me it is, after 40 years or whatever, I get at least one letter a day. I get some baseballs and stuff like that, and the old timers, the people that are from kind of the old school like myself, still write the most beautiful letters. And I want everybody out there to know that the players enjoy, most of the players enjoy the letters. And my wife, I call her my secretary, little Maria. She opens the mail. She Yeah, she opens the mail, gets the card, hands me the letter, and then I read it to her. And then the ones that write a beautiful, heartfelt letter, we keep those, and we keep them for a scrapbook, and still love getting them. So everybody out there, I love to get the baseball cards and love to get the letters. So I can actually, before we get off, I'll give you somewhere to send it, as long as people don't get crazy and send me 200 of them or something.
No, I know. That's as a hobby. If we are not greedy and we're cordial and we just ask for one or two, I think that's great. It kind of bothers me when I see people sending 6 or 7 or 10 of the same card and asking for an autograph. And I think that's a different part of the hobby in my mind.
Well, what I do is just as we're talking about this, is I'm somebody that for underprivileged kids and stuff like that, and say if I go to an event, I will take people that get a little bit stingy, not stingy, but get a little bit selfish and send too many of the same card or something like that. I'll keep them. And not all of them, but I'll keep some. And then I sign them and give them to the underprivileged kids, because I feel like, you know, you can share that and put a smile on a child's face too, if someone was being a little bit, you know, selfish that way.
Now, you looking back as a 20-year-old, a 22-year-old, and you're in the majors, did you think, you know, 20 or 30 years later, people would still be remembering you and asking to write your autograph? Does that seem weird, strange to you?
A lot. I didn't even think they'd still have the card still. Man, you know what? It's amazing. Some of the cards are just in great shape, you know, so it's amazing to me, and it's an honor. I was telling a story the other day that, well, Randy, how come you signed the cards, you know, because with my and I've got a podcast and talk about that later, but
sure.
I'm on Facebook. I'll answer stuff on Messenger, and I get a lot of stuff on Messenger. And people ask about the signing the baseball card and stuff like that. I love hearing that stuff and hearing from people and getting back to them. But yeah, it's amazing that the people are still sending me the cards It's a lot of fun. It's hard to believe they're still around, but you can't believe it. The amount of cars that they have of me. I thought they maybe broke the machine or something.
Now, do you have a favorite card from your playing days? Do you have a card that you really like finding, or is that like, oh, that's a great picture of me? Or do you have a card that you really like?
Wow, that's a great question. There's a headshot. I couldn't even tell you it's so hard with the Milwaukee Brewers, and with the Phillies probably, one of the ones in the old powder blue uniforms. It's an action shot. And while we're talking about the cards, I don't know how many people out there know that I played in the senior professional league after my major league career was over. It was an amazing experience, because there's a lot of Hall of Famers. You know, they had Ferguson Jenkins, they had Raleigh Fingers, and some other Hall of Famers that were in the league. And I don't know how many listeners out there, the senior baseball league has baseball cards, and I still get a lot of those in the mail.
That's cool. Now, remember the senior league, but, you know, being in Massachusetts, it wasn't on TV then. I think if there was a senior league today, it would be on MLB and one of the ESPNs, and it'd get a lot of play, because look what the XFL is getting in, you know, just for 2 weeks. So who did you play with? Who were some of your teammates in the senior league?
I was on the St. Petersburg Pelicans. Matter of fact, I was doing a podcast, Peter Gullenbeck, who wrote the book called The Forever Boys, and he actually traveled with the team, and I was in a podcast with him yesterday, so this is fresh in my mind. The St. Petersburg Pelicans, obviously in the stadium right there, we won it that year. When I went there, I didn't think it was going to be a serious thing. I thought it was just going to be about a bunch of old timers playing a pickup game and just screwing around out there. I couldn't believe how great a shape a lot of guys were in. And, you can imagine, I mean, remember John Matlack with the Mets, the great left hand with the Mets, and our third baseman was Roy Howe. Lenny Randle was on our team, Steve Kemp. We had Kenny Landro in center field. We had Doc Ellis was our pitching coach, the great crazy Doc Ellis, and so we had some great players, and you can never ever take that competitive instinct out of a professional athlete, or probably a lot of athletes. But once we got on the field, it was on. I mean, we didn't want to lose. Some of the guys were out there throwing 90, 95 miles an hour, including me. So
how was your arm at that point?
I was still doing pretty good. I think the only reason I got out of the game is just all the politics that were starting to get involved with it, and I lost my edge. I still could throw the ball really hard. I retired after my second stint with the Phillies in 1986, and then you see a lot of the football players and stuff like that have had enough, and after sitting around for a couple of years, they want to give it another shot. And I kind of got that little bit of that edge back. I was actually, I don't know if I already mentioned it, but I was opening day pitcher. We won it, and we won opening day. Peter Gallenbach was telling me that Bill Lee was the manager, coach, and everything of the Winter Haven Red Sox team.
Sure, I remember the face man.
Yeah, Bill Lee, the crazy left-hander, and he was he didn't take it obviously as serious as some of the other guys did. He put himself in center field, and I think he ended up dropping the ball out in the outfield and cost them the game, and it really pissed everybody off. But it was great fun. It was great to see all the guys, and believe it or not, there's still baseball cards out there for the collectors.
I'll have to look for those. I have not seen them. Now, you mentioned your cards. There's a in the back, the epilogue in the back of your book. There's a picture of all your cards that you put in, which is great. Do you have a lot of memorabilia from your playing days? Did you keep much stuff in terms of your uniforms, or did you collect autographs or anything while you were playing?
What a great question. I don't have a big memorabilia room, but I call it Maria's office. My wife Maria, but I put some memorabilia in here, and as we speak, I've got my case to my right here, and I've got two of my original gameplay gloves. I got a Phillies, Milwaukee Brewers, San Francisco Giants gameplay hats, along with World Series bats, the World Series trophy, and then a collection of World Series balls. I even got right in the center of it. I've got Pete Rose, Pete's ball with 4256. He's gotten so yes, I do. And then I've got some pictures around, and I'm getting ready to hang that picture of the great honor of the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. It's a beautiful plaque they gave us. So to answer your question, not much, but it's kind of a little bit of a love me room.
did you keep the ball from your first hit or your first win? Or
that's another great question. Yes. It says first big league hit. St. Louis Cardinals, it was 9/27/76. And I remember it was, there's a kind of a fun story to that where I got to hit, I'd been called up at the end of my, actually after my AAA season. And I got to hit for the very first time. I was probably a better hitter than I was a pitcher. And I loved it hit, and I said, well, Randy, you know what? You may never, because you never know. You never know if you're ever going to get a chance to hit in the big leagues again, you know. And but I got up to bat, and I said, okay, Randy, make sure you take at least one pitch so you can stand here a little while. You know, just to say that you, you know, you had to spend a little time at the batter's box. And the first pitch was so fat that I hit the first pitch that I saw to the top. I missed a home run in the right center field over the white center field wall in St. Louis, Busch Stadium in those days. So I got my first hit, my first pitch and everything was a double off the wall in St. Louis.
That's awesome. Now, I know Willie McCovey was a big hero of yours growing up, and you did pretty well against him the first time you faced him, huh?
I did. It was when like I said, you know, you probably remember that in the book. And I got the pitch against Willie McCovey when I was a kid. My grandpa used to bring me to Candlestick Park to watch the San Francisco Giants. And I idolized. Those were the days where, you know, Willie Mays was in center. Willie McCovey, we had Bobby Bonds, Juan Marichal, Sam McDowell, all those guys, and the Alou brothers. And I got the pitch against Willie McCovey, believe it or not. He stayed around that long, and I think I struck him out three or four times in San Francisco the first time I faced him. And my mom and dad got to see all that. But then Willie, I must have really made him upset, because when he came to Philadelphia, he hit a three-run home run off me. So he got me and I got him.
Now, did you have anyone that you owned? Is there any player that you love seeing to come up and you said, oh, here comes so-and-so. I got this guy. He can't hit me.
Well, now that I've got to make sure they don't live too close to me, I'm going to ever see him again. But I think overall it was left-handed hitters. We being a left-handed pitcher, so the left-handed, and mostly big guys that you could throw the breaking ball to and stuff like that. But there was, you know, there was left-handed hitters that used to own me also. I mean, I couldn't seem to get Ken Griffey out at all. And one guy that used to tear me up was with the New York Yankees was Greg Nettles. And I used to pitch the left-handed hitters inside, and, you know, and tie them up inside. But I didn't realize with that, the short right field fence in Yankee Stadium, that Greg Nettles, his first move, he would kind of open up and look for the inside pitch so he could pull it over the fence. And he actually hit it. The first time I faced him, he hit two home runs off me. So, should I say,
everybody? Change the way you pitched at him.
Yeah, maybe everybody got a piece of me and some didn't. How about that one?
Growing up in Boston, I was a lefty, and my favorite player was Fred Lynn back in the day. Did you have a chance to pitch against Fred Lynn or Carl Yastrzemski?
I did. I pitched against both of them. I pitched in that era where with Yastrzemski, Lynn, Rice, Evans. Let's see, Fisk. I think Fisk was with the White Sox then, but I did pitch against Carlton Fisk, and it was never fun coming to Boston. We with the Phillies, I used to pitch against those guys in spring training, but then when I was with the Brewers, it was really a difficult time. And I'm going to tell a little story here that probably none of the, unless you guys have heard, none of the collectors or the people listening in will hear about the Boston Stadium. You know, you as a player, you were in awe that you always, as a kid, saw the Green Monster and the great Boston fans. And, you know, the stadium almost looked like it was drawn on a postcard. It was so beautiful to us. But when you went into the clubhouse, it still had that tiny, it was just a tiny, rustic smell, I should say, probably a old jockstrap smell with old carpet in it, and that I remember. And one thing that was really cool is that in those days, they used to, I don't know if people listening are aware of, they still make it. It's the athletic tape. It's probably 2 inches wide. It's kind of a cloth type of a tape. And they would put that over your locker and they put your name on it. And that's, you know, the small metal locker. And so my name here is Lurch. And then where the metal locker was butted up, it was a brick wall. And above where instead of having to make your name again or your name tag, they would actually take the tape off of when you left after that series, and they would paste it, you know, stick it to that back wall. And it was amazing. Some of the old-time players that had come in to, you know, some of the Yankee greats and stuff like that, that I can't name names, but they had some of the old names stuck to that wall, and I just was in awe of all the different players that sat in my locker.
That's really cool. Now, I know just a couple more stories, if you will, if you get time. I know we're talking with Mr. Randy Lurch. He is former major league pitcher with the Phillies and the Expos and the Brewers and the Giants. He has written a book. It's called God in the Bullpen. It is a story of his battle with drugs, amphetamines, alcohol addiction, and fighting cirrhosis. It is available on Amazon. I highly recommend the book for you guys. Go take it, buy it on Amazon, send it to Randy. Randy will autograph it for you. It's a fun read. We're talking a lot of some of the trials and tribulations that Randy has come about in his career, but there's also some fun stories in the book as well. One of the things that I liked growing up, I was also a Dodger fan. I liked your story about the first time you went to Dodger Stadium, and you know, you saw some of the Hollywood elite in the stands.
That was amazing. I actually saw a old tape of some of the elite, and I just before I thought, wow, am I making this stuff up? Because it sounds crazy. But what they did is I was told, you know, that the old timers used to love to come to the rookies like me and kind of give it a preview of the stadium. You're gonna, you know, what's exciting about it and stuff like that. And one of the guys said, "Hey, you, Randy, you can't believe it. You're coming around Hollywood and the movie stars and stuff like that. Gee whiz, you know, because they're always messing with me, right? They're always trying to, they wanted to see how gullible I was. So they said, oh, yeah, you can't believe it. You know, Frank Sinatra and Don Rickles and Dean Martin. And so, you know, here's the rap, half of the Rat Pack. And you know, here's Milton, you know, they said Milton Berle, all these guys. They sit right behind our dugout, the visiting dugout, you know, on the field. And there they are, first row, right? And I go, yeah, you guys are full of baloney. You know, there's no way. And say, okay, you go find out. So anyway, I go out on the field, and the first person I meet is Vince Scully during batting practice. And it was so great that being a rookie and I was successful the first part of the season. I'd won a lot of games my first time in there, and I think I already won four games and maybe 4-1 or something like that. So the word had got out, this kid might be pretty good. And so first of all, I meet Vince Scully, and now we're talking. We go out to batting practice. When I'm coming back in, the crowd's coming in, and I look up, and they didn't lie to me. There was Frank Sinatra, Don Rickles, Dean Martin, and Milton Berle was standing right there, and I freaking couldn't believe it. And what a story! I said they're real people, and you know, I thought, what the hell are they doing sitting on our side of the deal? But Greg Luzinski used to love to just cut up with Don Rickles, you know, and he'd say something. Luzinski would get smart with him and said, you know what, you can't hit, but if they threw a cheeseburger at you, you'd hit, you know, something like that. Because everybody always said Luzinski was fat, right? So, you know, Rickles would really give it to him.
That's funny. Now, one other funny story. I don't want to ruin the whole book because there's a lot of great stories about your career, as you know, coming up, as well as
your post career, which is what's really interesting to me. But the one story that I thought was so funny was the Fan Man story in Philadelphia. I remember that as a kid. Could you tell us a little about the Fan Man story?
Yeah, the Kite Man.
Yeah, the Kite Man.
Yeah, the Kite Man. This is another story where they were telling me that the players, you know, they love to tell a player to beware of something. Well, they said, you better watch it because the Philadelphia fans, they're greatest fans in the world. But if they don't like you, you're doing a bad job, they will boo you out of the stadium. And I thought, wow, you know. So they said, yep, they even booed Santa Claus. They said Santa Claus came in the wrong time of year. He came in during the summer, not Christmas time, and they booed him out of the stadium. I said, wow, they even booed Santa Claus. This is bad. And so they had this guy that it was opening day. Bill Giles, he ended up being the owner of the Phillies. In those days, he was the head of the public relations department, and he used to promote all these different acts. You had Bomb Man, you had the Great Willenda, you had all kinds of stuff to bring the people in the fans in the stands. But opening day, he wanted to do Kite Man. And Kite Man was going to, they promoted it that he was going to, Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, I'll bet it was 100 foot tall to the top of it. And so he's promoting Kite Man. This guy with a kite is, you know, one of those great big hand gliders that people hang on to. He was gonna get to the top of the stadium, and then he was gonna take it, you know, the opening day ball. He was gonna swoop down to the mound and hand it to Steve Carlton, who was always the opening day pitcher. And so they promoted it, and then it's time for Kite Man. I watched Kite Man as a rookie. You know, I'm thinking, wow, this is pretty cool. So everybody's going, the fans are all excited, stuff like that. And here's Kite Man with his entourage carrying his kite all the way to the top of the stadium. And he's way up there in center field. And they made sure that they moved the fans that usually would be sitting in that area. They got them out of the way just in case and stuff like that. And this guy was a skinny little guy. You know, he looked like Adam Anthony, you know. He had this skinny little legs, and you know, he gets up there, he's got his helmet on, and so he's standing up there, and here's Bill Giles, the promotion guy, and Chrissy, who's his assistant, and so it's time to go, everybody, Harry Callis is announcing and stuff like that, and so they say, tell Kite Man to go. And it was a windy day. And you could see Kite Man, he was up there, and he was just trying the best he could to balance every wind gust. It almost turned him over every time. And then finally, Kite Man said, well, we can't go. And they said, Bill Dallas, Kite Man, you got to go. You have to go. We've been promoting this thing for months. And then Kite Man's handler comes back, and he says, no, Kite Man can't go. It's too dangerous. Finally, they went back and forth a few times, and Bill Giles says, tell Kite Man that if he doesn't go now, he's going to run him out of town. He's going to run him out of every stadium. He'll never, ever be Kite Man again. So they told Kite Man he's okay, and he lifted off, and he almost made it over the upper deck rail, and the wind gust hit him and drove him into the seats.
Oh, no.
And was a broken kite sticking up in the air, Kite Man's butt sticking up in the air, and all the security and everything going. To make a long story short, Kite Man, they're carrying Kite Man. His arms are hanging off the stretcher, and lo and behold, my teammates were right, because this poor Kite Man got booed out of the stadium.
Now, were you guys just going crazy, or were you just like, oh, my God, this? I can't believe I'm seeing this?
I couldn't believe it. Well, that was opening day, and I hadn't, you know, I was supposed to start like the third game of the season. I'm thinking, holy cow, they're booing this guy out of the stadium. I better do good for my first start.
You ended up having a pretty special relationship with the Philly fans, from what I know, from seeing it afar. I mean, you settled in the Philly area after your career.
do you think what attributed your special relationship to with the Phillies fans?
I never knew until after I retired, and some of the mail that, or like I was talking about the Facebook Messenger earlier, one of the greatest tributes I'm getting, and most of the people that I'm getting on Messenger, and again, if anybody wants to join and get on Messenger, you know, just say hi to me and that stuff, but. You know, and if somebody wants to talk about the drug or alcohol thing, I'm no expert, but I've been there. And no, the thing with I think what I've learned is that so many people were saying, Randy, you were always so nice to us. You know, they said we would watch you go and have a bad game, and then the next day or even after a doubleheader, you were so kind to the people, and you were so kind to the children. And signed their autographs with a smile on your face, and these people never forgot about it. And if I could tell the ball players today, man, you know, you'll look back on it after all these years like I am right now, and the greatest compliment you can ever be is you were nice to my son or daughter.
Yeah, I mean, just personally, you've been great to work with, talk with. You've been you're always cordially in terms of in the autograph community. I think you're one of the good guys in terms of people always are complimenting you signing. Is that something that was ingrained in you as a youngster, or just something you learned, or was something that you just had it inside of you?
I think number one, I love people, and that's why I wrote the book, because I believe that I had people when I was playing say, well, Randy, how come you're not acting like a big shot? And I prayed to God that I would always not, because I would say, well, don't you put your pants on, or you know, your underwear on, or shoot 1 foot at a time. I said, you and I are just the same. We're all God's children. And I think that as far as signing autographs, I remember when I was in the minor leagues and the major league team would come and do I remember this in Reading, Pennsylvania, actually, real good. I can see as we speak. The major league team would come and they would do an exhibition, and then everybody wanted their autograph. But then none of the people really wanted the minor league players' autographs, and I thought, man, I would love to sign an autograph. I would love to have somebody ask me for my autograph. That would mean so much if I could just put my name on that. And then when I got to the major leagues and somebody wanted my autograph, it was that special to me. And I can't remember if I turned somebody down, it was because I couldn't do it at that time.
I'm with you. Now, we're speaking with Randy Lurch. Randy has written a book. It's called God in the Bullpen. It is available on Amazon. I believe it's also available on BarnesandNoble.com. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's on that, and it's available in Kindle version also. So if people want to just get it and download it, I'm gonna run in the other room real quick and get the address if people want to get the book and send it to me. We're gonna be doing hang on 1 second.
No problem.
Maria, could you bring my tablet too, please? This is just a family show, right?
It is.
But I can
edit this out. Don't worry about it.
Here we go. Here's the address you want to send the book or whatever. It's Randy Lurch, of course, 3450 Palmer, Palmer Drive. It's Suite 4-196, Cameron, Cameron Park, and that's California 95682.
Okay, for my listeners, I will put that up on my website. So if anyone needs the address, it will be on the website where Randy's podcast is residing. So if you need the address, I will put that up on the website for you.
Yeah, and my podcast is under the Ralph Tyko, T-Y-K-O, network. It's easy listening. And what I've been doing is having a lot of the ex-baseball players and stuff on. I was trying to talk about baseball and what brought people to some of them to the Lord. And so next week we're actually gonna have my high school coach from baseball, and people will remember some of the names he coached. He's the winningest, if not, I think he's the winningest high school baseball coach in history. And he is 87 years old, and he's had the likes of people remember Jerry Manuel. Jerry was my teammate. Yeah, and I know he was manager of the year in the major leagues. He managed the Chicago White Sox and the New York Mets, but I believe he was manager of the year with the White Sox and also played in the major leagues. So he managed Jerry Manuel and some other really famous guys. So we're going to have him next week. And then people remember Fernando Vina, the Gold Glove second baseman for the Brewers and Cardinals, and also an ESPN analyst. So that's going to be next week. And then we're going to have Dennis Gacciola, who's a comedian and evangelist, the following week. So we've got a good cast.
Well, actually, why don't you let us know where that is again? So if people want to check it out, they can check it out.
Are you talking about the link?
The podcast.
The podcast is just go it's under the Ralph Tycho network. I have it right here. It's called Ralph Tycho. It's his station, it's his deal, just like yourself.
Okay.
And it's called the Comfortably Zoned Radio Network, and people can look it up and be able to find the link. I don't have the link in front of me right now. So the name of my show is called, which you probably figured, it's called God's Miracle. He asked me what I would want to call it, and I said, well, I'm a miracle that I'm still sitting here. So it's the Randy Lurch's God's Miracle on Ralph Tycho, the Comfortably Zoned Radio Network.
Well, I will certainly tune in. Maybe I can steal a few of your guests from my show. Wink, wink.
I think you should. And we'd have to keep in contact, we're going to, I'm talking to Massachusetts, but also, the Phillies, like I said, are going to have their 40-year World Series anniversary. And I think they're gonna be doing a big card show at the West Deptford Mall. I think it's gonna be the 8th of August. They're gonna do that over there, and they're gonna have some of the World Series guys over there. So if anybody's in the area, we're gonna go have some fun.
Well, I'm actually gonna be down the week before because the National Collectors Show is in Atlantic City this year. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's August 31st to, July 31st to August 3rd. So it's the week before. So I'm going to head down.
Well, you have to stay extra couple of days?
my wife, I can't believe I'm getting my wife to go to this one. She is not a collectible believer, if you know what I mean.
I got you.
Well, Randy, it was great speaking with you. I wish you great luck with the book. As I said, please, listeners, please pick it up. It's a good read. It is a good baseball book. It is a good relationship book in terms of friends and family and talking about Randy's faith and talking about his post baseball career, which you might probably not don't know about. We talk a lot about that, but it's interesting how you dealt with finding a career and finding your place in the world after baseball. You were a relatively young man when you retired, so that must have been a difficult time.
It was, and on top of it, there's even a great love story in it.
Yeah. The love, we have to wait till the end for the love story, though.
Yeah. But you know what? I think it'll be a good collector, too, so. But I wish everybody luck, and I'll be happy to sign the books for you, get them to me.
Okay. I will put the Randy's address that he gave out earlier in the show on the website. Hopefully we can stay in touch. You're always welcome on the program. If you have anything you want to talk about, maybe we'll talk at end of July so you can we can promote your 40th anniversary, reunion at the show, and maybe talk to a few of your ex teammates. I spoke to Jim Codd. I've spoke to Jim Lomborg. So I spoke to a few of the ex-Phillies, and it's nice to have another member of the team on the show.
Well, it's nice to be here. You've made me welcome. You've made me feel welcome. I appreciate it.
I'm glad. You be in touch, okay? You have a great day.
Well, that wraps up another edition of TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM Autograph Collector. My name is Jeff Baker, and I have been your host for the program. I want to thank Mr. Randy Lurch for joining us today. Randy had left talked about an address that you can reach out to him, and I will post that on where the podcasts are and on my website. So if you need the address, please consult my website, and you can reach out to Randy Lurch. I want to thank him for being on the program. Our next show will be March 8th. I have a former National League Most Valuable Player that I interviewed a couple weeks ago, and I have a very special guest. So hopefully you will tune in and download, and I'll let your friends know about the show. If you have any comments, suggestions, or feedback about the show or wish to be a guest on the show, please send me an email at ttmcast@yahoo.com. I want to thank you, the listeners, for hanging in there. We had a nice long show day after an interview with Randy. And as always, wishing you many happy returns.